You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. This is the continuation of the Antler Up sessions, and I'm joined by my good friend from the east side of the United States, Mr. Jeremy Dinsmore. Jeremy, how are we doing today?
Doing good, Dan. What's going on?
We are state week baseball. Ooh. This week.
Okay.
The week of state. So we got three. We usually have about two practices a week. Now we're bumping it up to three practices. And after last night's practices, as a coach, you're supposed to be very optimistic for 10-year-olds, but internally I'm going, we're not gonna win a game if you practice like this. Oh my God, like, it was a struggle last night to try to explain to these kids like, here's what you should be doing. Here's what we've practiced literally every practice the entire season, and you just still don't have it. And then they look in your eyes, but they're not listening to you. They're looking in your eyes with like this dead brain rotted by video games and scrolling on YouTube all day long. Like, yep. They just hollow on the inside. And then when the ball gets hit to them, they don't know what to do with it. These are 10-year-olds, man. And it's just like, what's going on? I'm losing my shit internally. But on the outside, it's like, okay, here's what we need to do. We need to da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay, you got it? You got it?
It's so,
and they don't
strange.
Respond. And you're just like, "It is." At this point, it is what it is, right? It is what it is.
It's so bizarre. I mean, that's, I just always, when you think back to your childhood and your sports days, and I just remember being 10 years old and playing, and it felt like, I don't know, like it was just awesome. I don't recall a time where I could look at a teammate other than maybe one where you could be like, you don't know what you're doing. Whereas everybody else, like, you know, you play. It was just like the time of the generation, I guess. And
it
has to be, just because I know that's exactly what you were just explaining about, like, the dead look in their face. I mean, that is every day when I'm teaching sometimes, especially in the health class. That is just the look. And it's like, okay, we need to do something a little bit different.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Everybody says, okay, well, social media is rotting their brains, or, you know, technology is rotting their brains. There's good things with social media, especially, like, we've kind of found some of that stuff on here in the hunting space. But outside of that, dude, it's like literally, I don't know. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. The other day I went on to make a post on social media for the Nine Finger Chronicles, right? Because that's part of what we do, is to promote our content by going on social media. And I blink and 45 minutes of me scrolling have gone by. And I'm like, what the fuck, dude? It's an addiction. They suck you in. And so there's times now where I just leave my phone for almost the entire day in another room while I get work done. And then I try to sit down and say, well, if I get distracted, then it's okay, because I'm done with everything else that I need to have done. So anyway, back to these kids. but like I can remember, man, if there was a rain out, I would be pissed. I'd be heartbroken. If a practice got canceled because of rain, I would be pissed. I would be heartbroken. And these kids just like, we had a couple kids, they just don't even want to be there. They're there because their parents have made them do something physical, and baseball must have been the best option for them. And they're just, they don't want to be there. There's zero effort. They never run. They never hustle. They always want to sit out because, now I say that with a couple of these kids, but then I also have kids that were probably more like us. There's a handful of kids on the team. They're like, let's go. I want to play. I'll do it. Hey, who wants to play first base? I'll do it. Who wants to play, who wants to play right field? I'll do it. They just want to play ball, man.
Yeah.
And it shows, right? Because they actually want to be there and they want to be good at the sport. And dude, give me a handful of those kids and, I'll win state.
Yeah, coaching's tough, man. I commend you for doing that age group too, just because it's funny where you could sit there and you have those issues, and I don't want to say issues, but you deal with that type of environment, and then as they get older, it's very similar, but there's just different motivational things and what you're dealing with, right? And it's just you hope that those ones that have that fire and that drive, that want to play and be active and want to participate and give you the effort, they could continuously do that as they get older, because then it turns into other things in life. And that's what, that's why a lot of people coach, because you could help fulfill that. And you're not going to get everyone. And I've known that just from my experience. I mean, it's awesome when I have the ability to still keep in touch with a lot of them. And then there's ones that I just know if they saw me, they would throw an egg at me. what I mean? Like there's, and you're not going to reach them all, but it is what it is. And, but yeah, I commend you, Dan, because that age group is tough.
I will say this. I'm not the best coach, right? I'm not the best coach. I'm not like, I was joking around that, I'm changing kids. Like I'm changing kids' lives. So if any of these kids get to the major leagues, they're going to be like, dude, I want to send a shout out to Dan Johnson when I was playing 10U baseball because he changed my life. Like, I know that's not going to happen. But when it comes to coaching, man, there needs to be more volunteers.
Oh, my God.
Especially
gosh.
With people who have that, whatever sports experience, because then what you have is you have a parent who's just filling a slot. And then the expectations that parents have for their kids do not match what the capabilities of the coaches are. And then there's always some kind of turmoil, right? And then you have that on top of like kids these days have to be dedicate time to one sport so early now compared to like three or four sport athletes in high school. So we go to one of the biggest, fastest growing high schools in the state of Iowa. And now we are going to my daughter's pretty much a one sport athlete right now. My oldest boy, he's going to do flag football this year as a fifth grader because he doesn't want to play tackle and that he's only interested in baseball. And so in order to even think about playing varsity sports at this point, it's almost like you got to start training. It's not like, hey, dude, there's 15 of us and we're going to put a varsity football team together this year. Everybody's playing both ways. Like that's not happening. Kids are specializing in one sport and they're also specializing in one position now. That to me seems absolutely crazy.
Nuts.
Yeah, nuts.
That's the other thing, like how you're saying about a big school, and that's where I teach. I teach at a big school, and a lot of these kids, some of these better athletes, are the ones that do play multiple sports, right? That are that multi-sport athlete. I mean, we had a kid this past year. I didn't really teach him much as far as in the classroom. I didn't even get a chance really to coach him, but I've seen him and some of my colleagues that do coach and all that stuff. And I mean, you just saw he was like a natural athlete, just his movement. But phenomenal football player, was like an all-state, played, he did play basketball, and he ended up sitting out lacrosse. But it's like, man, I guarantee you, because he played lacrosse, probably as a young kid, but also up until as he was a junior, man, I bet you if he was on the field this past year that our team would have even done better and pushed a little bit further into like the playoffs, yeah, because they had another kid that is going to play both college football and lacrosse, and a little kind of like my height, but you know, he's a little built like a little brick house, and man, he was good. And I think the two of them offensively would have just wrecked havoc. And it's funny because I think that trend, I feel like the trend of colleges and college coaches, when it comes to what they're recruiting, they do want those multi-sport athletes. But as what these parents and kids and what they think they need to do is that specialization in that one sport, yep, one position, and it's not the case. And I like seeing when there are good, reliable sources out there and they're like, hey, look, you need to do this. You need to do more than just being a catcher for baseball, or you need to be more than just a wide receiver in football, whatever it be. And it goes a long way.
Yeah. My son, my youngest son team, 7U coach pitch baseball, they pretty much put the kids in the same positions all year. I'm like, dude, you got to rotate these kids. Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm an asshole. Like, I am that guy where I would like, I don't know. I try not to be, Jeremy, trust me. Mm-hmm. I try not to be, but I'm very critical of how other people coach my kids. Because I can't coach everything. I want to, but I can't. And so like, I'm very critical, of how my kids are coached. And that doesn't mean that I'm critical of the way other coaches are coaching. Maybe that's the same thing, just a different way of saying it. But the thing that pisses me off the most is when you have a very young group of kids and they're pigeonholed to a specific position already.
Right.
Right. Then at some point you're not doing your job giving kids exposure at 7 years old to something, right? You got to try it out. They might just surprise you.
Yep.
Right. So then it's like, okay, well, so-and-so can't get a grounder at the beginning of the season, so we're going to put him in the outfield, or, you know, he can't catch a pop fly, so we're going to put him we're going to try to hide him. And then the next thing you know, it's like this kid is doing stuff that you don't even know about because you've already written him off for the year. So I don't know. I get really frustrated when young kids aren't given opportunities because winning takes more of a focus. There's more of an emphasis on winning at such a young age. And that's not the coach's fault.
Right.
Or that's not even really the parents' fault. It's what youth sports now has become.
Correct.
Because of the parents, really. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, well, I'm signing my kid up for this team and he's one of the best and he's going to be the best. And if he's the best, then we need to have the best coach and we got to win. I'm just like, Jesus, these kids can't even catch a pop fly right now. Like, D1 coaches are not coming to a coach pitch game.
No, God, no.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. And what these people don't realize too is, as they get older, you know, if you look at a team, look at a college baseball team that is perennial, always in there, just always has a chance to make the College World Series. Those teams, every single one of those athletes were their high school shortstop or their high school center fielder. They weren't just designated a right fielder. They weren't just designated a first baseman. If a kid is 6'6" and a bigger kid, he might have been the first baseman. Like, more time than not, though, those kids have played shortstop. They played their most athletic positions. And then when they get to that next level, they get put where they see fit. And it's like, okay, you might have been the shortstop for your whole life, but guess what? You're playing left field. And you know what I mean? Like, that's just how that is. And then
it all funnels up.
It all funnels up.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep.
Yep. All right. Nobody here came to listen to us talk about baseball as much as I want to, dude. Right. I love baseball. We should start another podcast about youth sports.
There we go.
before we get into the rest of the episode today, I do have to send a huge shout out to all of the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. And actually, I'm going to send a huge shout out to some of the current network partners, too, because I never really do that. But I want to send a huge shout out to Interstate Batteries. Without Interstate Batteries, the network would have never got off the ground. And so I want to send a huge shout out to Dan Spano and the Spano family for helping support the Sportsman's Empire podcast network throughout the entire time it's been a company. So huge shout out. Thank you very much. Huge shout out to Whitetail Institute. They are a new partner of the network, food plot company. Most of you guys know them. Go take a look at their product line over at whitetailinstitute.com. All right. And then we have the Nine Finger Chronicles partner. If you're looking for a broadhead, if you're looking for a mechanical, if you're looking for a fixed blade, if you're looking for a broadhead that a majority of their heads are made in America, awesome design. I have killed a shit ton of deer with these heads over the course of my life. Go visit wasparchery.com. And I do have a discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Next on the list is Vortex Optics. I got a package in the mail from Vortex, and they told me you can't talk about it until August 7th. I want to spill the beans. I want to be that guy who breaks the rules, but I can't. I can't do it. So stand by as I'm getting ready to make a couple announcements on behalf of Vortex Optics and a new product that they have coming out. I've held it in my hands and it's badass. These guys have rifle scopes, red dots. They have binocular spotting scopes. Anything you want in the optic game, go check it out, vortexoptics.com. We have Code Blue Sense. I'm a huge fan of the Rope-A-Dope Mock Scrape Kit. They have something called the Scrape Mate this year that I'm going to be putting at the bottom of my licking branches. It's going to be basically the scrape. On top of that, they have scent elimination products. Go to codebluescents.com, discount code NFC20 for 20% off. And then I got two, fullsneakgear.com, my t-shirt company. Go check it out. And then last, Reveal Trail Cameras. Did you get the new Ultra? Have you gotten the new Ultra yet?
I haven't had a chance to really mess with one yet. Actually, we were at Cabela's this past weekend, and I was finally like just held the box in my hand and checking things out. And that camo on it is pretty slick. I know it's not really going to do anything other than the look, but I mean, it looks good.
Yeah, it looks like a badass camera. Well, you're in luck, Jeremy, because it is a badass camera. Now, I haven't put it out yet because I am in coach mode right now. But next week, I have told my wife, I've already told her, I'm going to do deer stuff. And she's like, okay. And so next week, I got the green light to go put that Ultra out into the woods. Last year, they came out with the 3.0 versions. Those cameras worked very well. Zero issues there. Easy to set up. Go listen to a podcast I did with Greg Farrell from Reveal about the new Ultra, the design, all of the features from it. That's going to be your best shot at getting a ton of detailed information about that camera. So go to tacticam.com/cameras and check out all of their camera options. Jeremy Dinsmore, what are we talking about today on this Antler Up session?
Well, Dan, last week we talked about like all the different terrain features, and we said we'll pick up this week talking about access routes and just the importance of that. And I guess, you know, just the different variations, because with me hunting more of the big woods and you having more of that like that river bottom background and everything along those lines, I'm intrigued to hear how you kind of do that, because I know for me, the longest time, I've always felt like I was like pigeonholed, like I can only access certain spots by this one particular location. And it's like you're rolling the dice, right? So I've gotten a little bit better about it over the last couple of years. And I think it's led to a little bit more success over these last couple of years as well. So so I'm excited to see what we could talk about when it comes to this, just because it's a one thing that, you know, obviously you play the wind and everything like that. But I mean, if you're not getting in there, if you're getting in there and blowing out deer, you're not going to be seeing much, or maybe the deer that you hope to see in on a hunt.
Right. Right. I'm going to start by saying this. I have been a proponent of tweaking access routes the entire time I've had a podcast. the entire time since 2006 when I started taking hunting serious, like extremely serious, especially bow hunting mature whitetails. And so when I started changing and putting energy into certain access routes, that is when I had more encounter with bigger, more mature deer.
Right.
And that's the objective, right? Is to get closer and to get within shooting range of more deer. And that is the thing that if I was to say, if someone asked me on, if they were interviewing me and they would go, Dan, what's one thing that I could do to get closer and have a better opportunity at said animal? I would say, evaluate your access routes, because when I changed that, the game changed. I saw less deer, but I was closer to the deer that I wanted to shoot. I can remember, I think what I did wrong all those years ago, Jeremy, if I'm going to say something I did wrong, was I passed a lot of deer when I did this.
Okay.
I passed deer that I had never killed before, which was, I feel, a mistake. If looking back, I feel that was a mistake, because my access routes started getting really good and I started having encounter with those big 2-year-olds, those really good 3-year-olds. But I was like, I got to shoot a 4-year-old. I got to shoot something in the 150s. So I was passing, like, you know, 145-inch 3-year-olds, maybe even like, I can remember, I think it was 2010-ish. 9-ish, something like that. I can remember a 150 for a 3-year-old standing right underneath my tree stand, and I didn't even pick my bow up. And I look back at that and I go, what a douchebag that guy was, right?
Right.
I just was like, I don't know why. I wish I could teleport back to that time and be like, shoot that deer and get more experience. Anyway, access routes.
Yeah.
Dude, access routes are by far and if I was to write a book, you have all these guys have written books, the old school guys, they've written books, they've magazine articles. I'm that guy who leans into access routes very heavy.
Yeah, I think a lot changed for me when I started, I guess, diving into that a little bit more in detail and really focusing on that. And when I would go out scouting and, which I'm sure we'll dive into, but like if I would find that spot where I'd be like, man, this would be an area where I would hunt rather than like continuously pushing or anything along those lines. When I would find that spot, I would kind of take a few moments and pull up the map on my phone and be like, okay, what was the route that I got here? Like I kind of was scouting and just bumped into this great location and I really like it, whatever it be. Now I'm like, okay, how do I get in here? And whereas years past, I wouldn't care. I would almost like beeline for that area and just how can I get there the quickest and quietest? Whereas now there's a, like almost, I don't want to say I have a process, cause I just make sure, okay, what's the wind going to be like?
This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
There, but also when I'm there, right? So like it could be great for that one location, but if I'm going in and the wind's blowing right to a deer bedding or where I'm been seeing deer a lot, that's not going to do me any good. So that's like kind of the process that I've been taking, and like I said, the last couple of years I've definitely done a better job and been on deer more, killed more, all that type of stuff. And you know, it's like a
remember
Tony Peterson said something one time, and I think he said it even on my podcast, where he was like, it's almost like the hunt before the hunt. Like you're pre-hunting that access route for your actual hunt.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I want to kind of get to a point. I want to talk about scouting, right? Because just for a little bit, because it's important for me, what I've done throughout the course of the years is first you got to find the good spot, right? You have to find the tree stand location. And sometimes you find a tree stand location and you're like, okay, this is the spot. I have everything I need. I have the terrain feature. Maybe I've identified this as a staging area or a bedding area or a transition, so forth, so on. And now I got to find out how to get to this spot.
Right.
Okay. So what steps are you personally taking where you've done the scouting, you found the terrain feature that you want to hunt? How do you identify the access route to there, and then also include in this conversation the whole wind direction talk?
Right. So that's where, like, I'll look at, you know, if I pull up the map and like I said earlier, just like how I got there. But the main thing is going to be that wind base access. I mean, I'm trying to play the wind all the way into that location. So I want the wind obviously like in my face or perpendicular. And for me, like I said earlier, I used to take that quickest and quietest route, whereas now I may take the longer route. It may be, meaning I have to get up a little bit earlier, or if it's an evening sit, I might have to go in a little bit earlier, those type of things. But, I adjust that setup around that access just because my main thing is to go in undetected. I mean, that was, I think, such a turning point for me, because I know for a fact I was blowing deer out that I had no idea was there. I just kind of was dumbfounded, or just was, I think I was more arrogant to the thought of like, I was actually blowing something out of that. So silent, dark, slow. That's my plan of attack. I love morning hunts, but I mean, it is going in off of that wind base in my face or perpendicular. And then obviously when you get in there to that stand location, like you just mentioned, you want that right wind.
Do you ever, have an access route that you can think of to maybe a stand location where there is wind hitting your back walking into the woods? So you're going with the wind to your spot.
Yeah. There was one, and I learned very quickly that I was, and this was only 3 seasons ago. It was one location. It was a new spot on the property that my dad and I grew up hunting. And I just went in, and it was kind of like, okay, I set up a couple cameras and there were deer everywhere, good bucks. And, getting in there though, it was like damn near impossible. I mean, I was constantly blowing deer out, and like, I remember walking in just being like, the wind down here and just where, what it's consistently always doing, walking in, my wind's blowing right to them. Like there was just nothing I could do. And it was like, you took that chance of blowing them out in the dark, and then hopefully it shifts, which it usually does at that point in time. That's why I was going in there and hunting that spot, but it just, it wasn't in my favor. And it kind of sucks because you're sitting there like feeling defeated. You just blew, like you hear, and it's not even gray light yet. And you're like, son of a gun. But that spot in particular, and I've only ever hunted it one other season. I don't know if I did. I think I just hunted it later that year and just kind of was like, it's the rut. I'm going to be blown shit all over the place anyway. Uh-huh. And hopefully I could get lucky a hot doe basically blew out of here and a buck would come over and find that scent. So I was kind of playing that luck game, which I don't like to do, but it was what was calling for.
Yeah. This is where I have trouble, right? So I, on the How to Hunt Deer podcast that I also host, I try to keep things as simple as humanly possible when I have those types of discussions. And, over the course of the last couple weeks, I've been talking with Jason over there, my co-host, and I've been trying to find these simple ways to talk about something that I personally think is it's complex for the beginner, but guys like us, we make these decisions so fast now because we've had all this experience doing it.
Right.
For me, I the access route is so important that the actual wind direction I use to get in there is less important. And I know that sounds like it's counterintuitive, but hear me out on this. Mm-hmm. There, and a lot of it has to do with the farms that I hunt and only being able to access farms from specific directions, meaning, I have my main farm that I've hunted for 18 years now, maybe, you know, closer to 20, and I can only access it from the east. So in order for me to get all the way back down to the west side of the farm, it's a 480 total acres. In order for me to get clear on the west side of this farm, I have to go through the entire farm at some point to get to it. Right. And so I've learned that driving a truck is better than walking. I've learned that an e-bike is even better. And so I've had to learn how to have the least amount of impact on this farm walking through it. With that said, I know that I have an idea where deer bed. Okay. And so I know that if I walk upwind of some of these deer at 10, or let's just say 50 yards, they're going to smell me and then they will blow out of there. However, if I walk upwind of a deer at 200 yards, they're less like, they'll smell me maybe, but they're also that distance between where I'm walking in at to where they're bedding has diluted my scent so much that it's no longer a threat for them. They're aware of it and it will eventually go away because I'm not just parking there. I'm walking through that area and, less intrusive.
Right.
Right. At that particular point. And then what I do is I call it the rule of 90, where I made that up to sound smart.
Smart.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I'll take this long walk in and then I'll cut a 90 degree right up to my tree stand.
Okay.
And so access to me is, there is okay. It's, there is time where there are times where 200 yards away and your scent is blowing into an area is okay. I have found that. Now, I am not hunting really high pressured public land that gets murdered by people every single week. So deer there might have a different view of a scent at 200 yards as opposed to, you know, but I'm also hunting an active farm. There's cattle there. There's farmers there. They're in and out with their trucks. They're side by sides, and so I'm sure that they smell that stuff all the time. So they're probably they're okay with some of that stuff. So I'm kind of okay walking with my scent going into a bedding area at a longer distance if it means getting to the right spot that's actually closer to them when I take that 90 degree turn.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So when it comes to how you use terrain to hide yourself on some of these, I kind of live and die by this, the whitetail, how they do it. And that is, I try to stay on the lowest part of the terrain. If I feel a deer is bedding on one ridge over or one draw over, I'm a draw away and I'm in the low spot so they can't see me. And then, like I said, I walk the low spot. wind probably perpendicular to me. And then I will walk with the wind in my face to get, I take that 90 degree turn, and then I'll walk with the wind in my face to my stand location for the shorter distance usually. But it's not always the shorter distance. Sometimes that 90 degree turn can be, I don't know, 100 yards away. Sometimes that 90 degree turn can be 10 yards away from wherever the tree stand is. And so it just, this is where I have a hard time describing it, because it starts to get really complicated based on the terrain feature that you're hunting. If you're hunting a big draw that runs north-south, you're going to want a, like on the west wind, you're going to want to set up on the east side of that face where the deer are cruising up on the military crest, right? They're not going to be skylined. Right. Unless there's like a oak tree or an oak flat up there that they might be feeding their way up to that has a ton of cover on. But my access route is low. I come with usually on this scenario, if I'm saying north is high ground, south is low ground. If I access from the north, I'm dropping in usually on a field edge, dropping into the low spots, taking the low spot all the way to where I need, where I feel like I'm going to have the best, what am I thinking about here? The best odds of intercepting this deer movement coming off this point on the south side. And then they're working their way up to the north destination food source. Usually there is a staging area in there at some point. Okay. So what happens is then I drop down out of the field edge. I will walk down with the wind hitting my right shoulder, the right side of my face as I'm walking south. Then where that transition meets the edge of the staging area is where I pop up, and there's a tree stand there. So I'm catching movement coming south to north on that. And that's just one example of how I do that.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as three suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
Yeah. It sounds a little bit very similar to what I have to do when I hunt with my dad, like the club. I mean, it is, I'm kind of how you are, very similar, where you have the east where you're accessing it mainly from, correct? That's what you said, like it's that one spot. Like for me, it's the same thing, and where we're kind of accessing it from the top. And that was always like my biggest thing. And that's where I've talked to all my really good buddies. And I was like, I need to understand this a little bit better. Like break it down, like dummies 101, access 101 for me, please. Like, just because this is what we always have done. This is what we do. And it actually, it works in that favor that we could kind of go down this two track rocky kind of road that no one drives on. It, like there's no four wheeler or anything like that that we drive on that road during the hunting season. So it's like, it's very rocky a little bit, and we just work our way in. And then what you were just saying about that 90 degree, there was a spot where 2 years ago that I killed a buck where I knew there were some good deer trails that I wanted to stay off of, just because they use this, they almost use that road about 20 to 70 yards in off of that main two track road. And those deer come from the bottom to the top in the morning, from they get done feeding for wherever food sources to browse the fields that are across the roads, all that type of stuff. And they work their way back up top of the mountain for bed. And that is where like it works out for us, because if we could get as low as we can before we start bumping into deer, hopefully you beat them back and all that type of stuff. That's when we're in good. If the wind's good and we got like our northwest wind or just a true north wind, like we're golden. And that is like that to us, especially to my dad and I, like the spots where we hunt on that location is just dynamite. And like when it's not, then that's when things get tricky and we just can stay out of there. We pick a different spot to go hunt, whatever it be. But that's exactly what you were saying, almost making that 90 degree cut. That's what I did. Like I said, 2 years ago, I stayed off all these trails. I snuck my way in. I bounced. I kept going almost from like a low spot to the next little mini high spot to that next little mini high spot until I got to where I needed to be, and set up a tree. And I had it marked with like a little, you know, eye or whatever, those flashlight eyes. And I got up it, and lo and behold, I actually just looked at it the other day. At 11 o'clock, I had a couple does come by. I shot the doe. 15 minutes later, right over the little crest of the ridge, the buck came up, and that's when I shot him. And 15 minutes later, so it was like I doubled up in 15 minutes, and the deer did not hit my ground scent whatsoever. And it was exactly, it played out exactly how I was hoping to have it played out using the wind. And that morning, I know for a fact, I did not bump any deer. And kind of going back to what we would always do with that road, Dan, since deer would use that, they're within those trails, like 20 to 30 to 70 yards off of that road, deer bed in that, 'cause it's this thick, nasty brush. Right. Yeah. So then as you go in, it might open up to more of the timber, might open up and then get even more thick type of ordeal. And obviously the terrain just, it varies. So that's like the other case. Like, I've bumped deer where there were only 15, 20 yards off the road. Sometimes if it's early season, I could actually sneak by them. And if it's later in the season and the browse is dying or whatever that's, it's been, you know, fed on, those are the times where it's like they see me coming and they're bouncing, and that's when it's like, shit, I was either got in here too late, something along those lines, because I've done that before. But those are the times too, like if it's the rut, I just continuously kind of push, because hopefully, again, you play that card like, well, they're in here for a reason. And it's kind of like that, I don't want to say the bump and dump, but it's I've kind of used that, and I'm not so sure that's exactly what it was, but I've had opportunities where it's November 6th or whatever. And as I'm working down, a buck has a doe pinned down. I bump him out of there. I go down just a little bit further to where I have wanted to go. I set up, and then next thing you know, all hell breaks loose around me.
Yeah. Yeah. The bump and dump, however, has never worked for me.
Yeah.
I've tried to like do a Hail Mary on certain years where I've known where a bedding area is at. I've walked in there, I've just destroyed it, and then I set right up downwind over where the buck was bedded, and they've never come back. So I'm sure I did it wrong, but my next question is, do you feel there's a difference? Like, do you approach access routes differently on a morning hunt versus an afternoon hunt?
I don't think I do, to be honest with you. Like, I kind of look at that process of like what that wind is doing. And I don't know if I really could say like, I do something drastically like the morning this and, you know, like just going back to like what we were saying, like pick that club where I've hunted my whole life. Man, I hate going into our side on an evening just because I know, like, it's almost like if I know I'm going to anticipate a deer moving in the evening, man, I'm still going in early, and I might sit there all day and not see a deer until they're ready to go back down and feed, and I'm crossing them off. Like, that's just what I'm going to do, just because I know 9 out of 10 times I'm going to bump deer just because of I'm limited to that access point.
Right. Right. It really, for me, access routes are all about where deer are coming from and where deer are going. Okay. Yep. So I'll take an afternoon hunt here. I am 100% okay with walking through the destination food source, walking through the staging area to get to, or, you know, if my stand is in the staging area or wherever it's at, I'm 100% okay with sitting or walking through all of that stuff to get to my tree stand to where deer are going to be coming through. And for me, I feel like my scent has dissipated in a way where I don't think they're going to be bothered by it when they get to it. If they are, well, they've already gone past me.
Right.
And so they're, and more than likely they're going to get spooked. They're going to come back through or go a different direction. But as long as my scent in the tree is not what spooks them, then I'm okay with that. Right. Yeah. And I use a couple products like Nose Jammer. I spray on my boots. Say what you want about Nose Jammer. I like it. I'm comfortable and confident with it. So I use it. And I use it very liberally. Like I'll spray it on my e-bike when I'm on my other farm. I'll spray it on my boots. I'll spray it on my backpack, on my hat, like everything, right? Mm-hmm. Outside of that, now on a morning hunt, I know that the deer are not in their bedroom yet. So I'm okay with going, I'm diving into a bedroom or walk, or maybe not going right through it, but going to an area where I feel deer bed at, going through or near that, or my wind drifting through it on my access route, because I know that when I get into the stand, then I have more of a Loctite scent cone, and I'm in a position to hunt, and my access, my scent's doing what I want in the tree stand. So I'm okay with, what I'm getting at is I'm okay with going through where deer are going to be,
right?
Not where they're at, where they're going to be, to get to a really good tree stand, a set or a tree or wherever I plan on hunting. So I'm okay with that. Now, what does that mean where on a morning hunt, I'm hunting a bedding area or a transition area leading to a bedroom? Well, now I have to take the opposite access route out. Mm-hmm. I'm not going back through the bedroom when I'm leaving the tree stand in the morning.
Right.
I'm having to take the other way out. So really what I'm saying here is that I have two access routes for every location. That is right. The morning hunt, and that's the afternoon hunt. And because I don't hunt all day, man, I just can't do it. I can't do it. And so I don't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that works. I mean, that's the, because I'm trying to think of some of those spots, like how I would have to approach it for a morning versus an evening sit. And I've done it before, and just like, honestly, just like nothing changes other than the fact that like, I'm just playing that wind and just hope, like it just will dictate where. And I like what you were saying earlier about like, you're like, for me, I'm mainly hunting those spots where I'm hope like the deer are going to travel through. Because those deer, I have no idea where they're bedding. I know they're bedding somewhere up top on that opposite side, but I don't know exactly where. Like I said last week, like I'm the worst buck bed hunter, all that type of stuff. So it's like, I know these deer funnel through here, and as long as I could get there at that time. And if that means, like I said, if I'm not going straight, like what I would think of it this way, I would go down, I'd follow a line, and think of like your old school, like deer hunter, where it'd be like, okay, here's point B. I'm walking straight in from this point, right? Like, and no matter what happens, that's that route. Make like a hard, like you said, 90 degree. Whereas like now I'm going in maybe a little bit above, or, and I'm slowly dropping down. And like what you were saying, cutting that 90 degree, and I'm going up over little pieces and quietly moving in there. So then that way my scent isn't distributed all over. I'm kind of missing those little game trails that they like to take, all that type of stuff. And I'm setting up in between that spot where I know they'll be traveling up through. And again, I've seen it the last two years, where I've seen more deer up there, and feel uncomfortable without blowing out or anything along those lines. And I'm watching how they're moving, and I'm taking note of that just because now I know, like, I could get in a little bit closer. I could push down just a little bit further. I could push in. And then it's like, oh, wow, here's why they were using that, because it's a lot more thicker and they are going towards bedding. And so then that's when, say in the morning hunt, what I've done is if I sit there, I'm like, okay, when the time is right, that's when I would get down and make a little bit of a closer move for the evening sit in that location. So that's where I've done a better job of that. And because like in years past, what I would have done back at home, and like what you said, is like, I'll look at it and like, okay, down here, if I'm hunting lower, I know the wind this afternoon is not in my favor. So, okay, right. I need to find a different spot. And like, so I'm getting out of there as discreetly as I can without bumping anything or letting a deer know that I was in there. So then I'm going to a different spot, different location. And that's when I get a little bit more aggressive and go to an area that I might not really, I don't want to say I don't care if I blow something out, but that's when I might get a little bit aggressive and like, what can we learn from this hunt? Can I have maybe a camera somewhere or have past history. Let's sneak in there the best that we can. And that's when I know I have buddies that will be like, oh man, we don't have to go in till 3 or whatever. And I'm like, I'm going in at like 1 because I'm going to go super slow. I'm going to take my time. I'm going to take a couple steps. And that has helped me a lot the last couple of years.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what happens here is this is a trial by error conversation.
Yeah, 100%. And it's like how your property sets up. I mean,
yeah. And because you can't just go, you can't have an infinitive, like a square or a circle that's in like goes infinitely. You right. have borders that you have to, maybe it's a big river that you're not going to swim a big river every day. Maybe you take a boat. I don't know, mm-hmm. but there's a big obstacle there. Property lines are obstacles that you have to, the new farm, I'm looking at it on my digital map right now, and I can literally only access it through the northeast or the southeast corner of the property because it is surrounded by other, you know, it's surrounded mm-hmm. by other things. So this just means that I have to be very careful on how I access that. Now, since I have an e-bike, it has made it very easy for me because when I was walking through that gate, and walking, because you have to go through it right. in order to get to this back 80. And the deer were seeing me, and they were running away. The e-bike, when they see that, they look at it. They don't think it's a big issue. And then right. they kind of chill out a little bit. But by then I'm gone. Right. I'm not walking. I'm driving through just like a tractor or a truck would. And then they're cool. Then yep. they go back to being, you know. And then I see deer. But when I was walking in, so visually that's a threat to them and they didn't like that.
Right.
I don't think in the morning it's near as a big of an issue because they're out in the fields and then they're coming back to bed down where I'm at. But it's a trial by error thing.
Right.
The only way that you can figure this out is by doing it over and over again and then learning from failure. Yeah. Right. There are times, though, you have to be smart enough to understand that, okay, I didn't get busted that I know of coming in here, but I also didn't see deer. Well, that's an indicator that a couple things are wrong. You bumped deer coming in and you didn't know it, or your scent is doing something downwind while you're in your tree stand that you don't know about.
Right.
Right. Especially if you set up on a really thick trail and it's got a ton of cover. It's just a really, really good spot. And all of a sudden it just goes dead. Well, it's probably because of you doing something. So you got to be able to find ways to get past that. Find ways around that. And maybe it's taking a bigger loop. Maybe it's coming in from a completely different direction. If you have access, maybe it's knocking on a door of a neighboring farmer and just being like, hey, listen, I do not want to hunt your property. I just want to walk down this field edge to get to the backside of my property. is that okay? And that's, you know, it's worth a try. Maybe they say no, maybe they say yes, but it is 100% up to, you know, up to the farmer, but it could help you gain access to this farm. And so long story short is just like all these conversations that we have is just try and be aware of your surroundings and what is happening around you while you're walking into the tree stand. Maybe you hear a deer running and you don't see him, but you hear him. Well, that's an indicator that you have caused this deer to stand up. Maybe they see you, maybe they smell you, maybe it's both. And if it's both, then you're toast, right? Then you're toast that night. But I don't know, man, just play around with it. And you're not going to knock it out of the park the first time you go in there. Again, be comfortable with failing and then learn how to creep around these deer, come through the woods, because there is a way. There's always a way, in my opinion. Or at least that's the optimistic side of me.
Right. Oh, I'm with saying, you. Yeah. Because I think if not, then you're like, oh, I guess I'm going to hopefully, you know what I mean? Like that's where, you know, and I think that's the going back to even talking to some of my best buddies that are such good hunters, and they talk about like saying, like, start asking why. And Dan, like once I started doing that and figuring out like, man, this spot is littered with sign, you know, this looks like almost like a staging area, because then there that, like, if you look, up the ridge where I just came down from, like there's a heavy beaten trail where it converges to that one thing. Like, okay, so they're laying a little bit of sign here. They might be browsing. There's a little bit of oaks. Okay. So man, in the morning, it might be tough to get a little bit lower, but man, I could be up top and really sneak in and beat them and feel comfortable with that access route. Like that's the decisions where I've become better at, where I'm like, okay, I'll sit up here and I might learn something or I might have encounters. Whereas in years past, I would have went full fledged right into where that hot sign is or where they're feeding and try to get set up. And I know I busted deer out doing that. So I've tried to, how can I be semi-aggressive, but very conservative at the same time about setting that up. And it goes, it goes back to what we've been discussing here for the last 40 minutes of getting in there cleanly, the best that you can. And you know, when you are out scouting, like we talked about at first, you find that, like, think about now, like retrace those steps and really break down, how can I get in here? Look at when, look at the different possibilities. And like I've said before, like I like always doing like predetermined markings on whatever apping service that you're doing, like trails, like, okay, this is where, and obviously you're not going to be 100% to that, but if you are damn near close, you could really give yourself favors, because I'm telling you, like I go back to that 2 years ago to that location, like what I explained of, man, this sign was just awesome and it led to a scrape, then there was another scrape and it like brought up top on like on a little like flat. That's where all the sign was. I was like, man, if I could just be up just a little bit more, I could still shoot into it, like where they're coming up from, and just I think I would be undetected. And that's exactly what happened, and that's like light bulbs went off for me.
Yeah. It's, and the best part is it will be a struggle at first. However, once it clicks, you're going to be filled with joy because dude, there's nothing better than getting into a set or doing a hanging hunt and your access route is point on and you stand, you hear something coming and you turn around and it's a giant and you're just like, bingo. Right. And it clicks. And now you have this little area figured out. Right? You have this little area figured out. It's even better when it's outside, when you do something and it's like outside of peak rut, where you really have, it's like, dude, I don't know. I'm my gut tells me to go here. You walk this, you do this, you set up, and it's mid-October and there's no real breeding going on. And the deer stands out of his bed, or you see him come out of this thicket and he's coming right at you and you're like, holy shit, dude, I got it. Yeah. Now you got to shoot him, which is a completely different story.
Right.
But the strategy worked at that point. Your access route got you to that place. And that's, my opinion, the access route is 75 to 80% of the battle.
Yeah. And I like think back to some of your main good areas, because I'm thinking of some of the same that my dad and I have been going in at and hammering down the last couple of years. And you might make some tweaks, right, to trees, and you might have a set stand in that one spot for a couple of years, or you might bounce around to that one little core area within that vicinity. But they're good because you have a good access route, right? Like that's why they're good, is because you're not continuously going in there and blowing out deer every single time. You know, that's why those spots are always really good. It's because, one, it is a good area, but two, you as the hunter have a good access in and out that allows it to continuously be good for you.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a great place to end, my friend, Jeremy Dinsmore. Today's conversation was about access routes, trial by fire, learning the wind direction. I'm sure we could dive into more specifics, but what it comes down to is you have to take what you have available and mold that, right? And mold your strategy around that, because you can't access from every direction. And so you have to be smart. And a lot of it could come with time of year. A lot of it could also come with crops, right? With corn. Corn is awesome because you have this big, you know, tall cover to sneak into. Maybe you have to take a different access route with beans, or once the crops are out, or if it's through a cattle pasture, right? Maybe you're using livestock as cover because there's some noise with livestock, and maybe you just walk right through them. I know there's a couple places where I walk right through a herd of cattle to get to some of my spots, and that does wonders for me. Yep. Right. And so play around with these things, be prepared to fail, but also be prepared to observe and learn from that. And I think what's going to happen is if it is at all like what I've experienced, access routes will get you closer to deer. Good access routes will get you closer to deer, and then your opportunities will go up. So, Jeremy, any final thoughts before we shut her down today?
Shoot your bow and work out.
Don't say that, dude. I have not shot my bow, and I've really been slacking in the working out department. So again, I should be doing it every day, but I'm just like the other day, dude, I spent 4 hours throughout my day, and please don't take this as me bitching, but I made the decision to dedicate 4 hours towards my son and baseball, and both my sons and baseball. In the middle of the day, I took him to the batting cage. It's awesome, right? But then I had to work till 11 o'clock, meaning I chose to not work out, right? I made the decision, and that's an excuse, but I need to get back on that horse and get my legs tuned up for South Dakota.
Yeah, I'm excited for you on that. I can't wait I want to hear more about that on an episode we record.
Yeah, absolutely, dude. Absolutely. Maybe next week we talk about preparing for the season.
I like it.
What
Let's
that
do
looks
it.
Like for us. All right. Yeah. Jeremy Dinsmore, Antler Up. Go check it out on the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network. If you like it, go give it a 5-star review on Spotify or wherever you download your podcast. Do the same with the Sportsman's Empire Network feed and the Nine Finger Chronicles. Good vibes in, good vibes out. Wear your safety harness, and we will talk to you next time. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.